What's up, humans? Welcome to the Human Music Podcast. I'm Luke Rain. My co-hosts are Tesco and Rip Kenny, and we are all music producers, artists, and producer coaches. This show is where we discuss all things music production and interview amazing creatives about their origins, their process, and whatever else comes up. This week is episode 129, Random Producer Advice, Volume 2. We tapped in with our humans on Producer Dojo's Dojo TV live stream, link in the description, and answered burning questions like, what are our favorite new production techniques? What's really important when writing a song? How much sausage fattener is too sausagey? Do you really need that element in your song? Do you need to pull out all your producer tricks in every tune? Do you need to get rid of all your imperfections? Do you need to stick to a genre or energy level in your artist project or DJ set? How different do you need to be to stand out and break through the noise? And is figuring out what you don't want to do as important as knowing is what you do want to do? Or something like that. All this and more off the rails discussion in this week's episode of the Human Music Podcast. What's up? Your song of the week you're listening to behind me here is my new tune that's about to drop, Luke Rain, featuring Vibra Bohemia, Kalima. Kalima. Remember that shit from Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom? Whatever. It's out Thursday, December 1st. The link down below will get you to pre-save. Please pre-save. But if it's past December 1st, it'll just get you to the song. And right below that, there's a link to all my Luke Rain releases in chronological order. So you can go support that song and all the other songs below it. Thank you so much. And while you're down there, you might as well check out our sponsors, including my sample pack. It's the Spice It Up Percussion and Foley Pack. That's over 2,000 percussion loops and one shots from your boy Luke Rain and the homie Porch, and you get 50 rack instruments that come in Ableton and Reason versions. So you got all these instruments, come on, it's amazing. It's only $30 and you get, you know, years and years worth of splice samples basically on it. And then Dojo TV, that's I mentioned that before, didn't I? That's where we do these free producer live stream classes with the Dojo Senseis, and we record our podcast live there every other Tuesday. Come get on in it, it's free. Tesco's Patreon, your boy Tesco launched a Patreon channel where you can get educational content, project files, behind the scenes footage, access to his Discord, track feedback, and even private lessons. What? Go learn from your boy Tesco. And the weekly download, that's where we learn from our boy Ill Gates in his private weekly group lessons and get access to over 300 more episodes in the archive for just $20 a month. I've been watching a bunch of these lately, catching up on some I missed. Oh my God. Like the one about mastering what? And there's this one I'm watching where Future Twist is talking about like how to design good merch and market it and all the services you need to use to get your merch out there. Just so many gems and so many types of categories. It's crazy. And then guest practices where you can learn from Seth Drake at the Approach Institute. He's the best engineer we know. And your first class over there is what? Free, son. Check out thehumanmusicpodcast.com if you want to check out our website or you need more links or whatever, man. But till then, let's just get on into this episode.
Hello, people of Earth. This is Tesco with Rip Kenny and Trap Jesus. And you're listening to the Human Music Podcast. Podcast. Woo!
Human Music Podcast. I like it.
What's up, humans? Ayo.
Hello.
Yeah, that's what's up. We are back. What's up, Dojo TV? What's up to the chat? What do we say?
Hello, friends.
That's not what we say.
Big up!
There we go.
Big up, chat.
There we go. Big up. I need it every week. It's not a real episode of the Human Music Podcast Live unless Rip Kenny says big up, chat, and that perfect voice he's got going on.
You know, I would say that seems to be true at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I won't. I refuse to let it happen. I ain't going down like that, Jack.
Well, I ain't doing the intro, so like this works out.
I know, right? We all have our role to play. Still figuring out Tesco's role. I do the what's up, humans. You say big up chat, and then we shrug.
Tesco doesn't need to do anything. He just sits there and looks pretty, dude.
Oh, man, that's true.
Hey, I like to be more than just some arm candy, all right?
Well, you are, and that one. You're also the window dressing. You are. Exactly. You're the full package, bud.
Oh, okay. You know, see, you know all the right things to say.
I'd say overall we're a pretty good looking group of humans.
Yeah.
Chat, what do y'all think? Are we pretty? Tell us we're pretty.
At least in this multiverse.
F in the chat for there's a
multiverse
here.
Out there where we're ugly as fuck.
Oh, yeah.
And so, then ain't this one.
We all have eye patches and fucking goatees. Four legs and no arms. Just,
yeah, like
Tesco's working on the goatee thing going on over there.
You know, I'm doing what I can.
Just get the sides over here off, and we can get the evil Tesco. Yeah. Darkest timeline.
C-138.
Oh shit, son!
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. That fucking guy. So we got Suboctive in the chat saying it's her first human music podcast experience.
Oh, welcome. Shit!
Welcome, yes. Welcome,
big up, biggest,
and Benani talking about how great Mr. Bean is with Suboctive. So
Mr. Benin,
shouts out to all Mr. Benins in the world.
Nice.
Yeah, all right. So you guys are getting the official human music podcast experience here where we roll in either barely on time or slightly late to the live. Rip Kenny.
Hey, I have never been late to a single one except for today. So
Rip Kenny's out here getting jacked because we live in the multiverse where we're all handsome.
I'm trying to rehab my fucking hip because 2 years after my injury, it still hurt every day. So then I was like, after the album got done, I was like, fuck that. I'm going to spend some dedicated time fucking getting rid of that shit because that sucks and it's working, so I apologize for being late.
Yeah,
all right, I accept your apology. Okay. If it's for the hip.
Yeah. Now that you got all the pain out and you've written an album, you're like going to rehab and like taking care of yourself again.
Next album, there's gonna be no pain. There's gonna be all like elevator music, Always Sunny
Luke,
theme.
You have heard a single word I have said. There is no next album. Don't ever.
Yeah, so I can say anything what I want about how it's going to sound like, and and I won't be proven wrong.
It's actually just going to be 14 tracks of 31 seconds of silence, and you're just going to be confused the whole time. Like, did something fuck up? And then it's literally just a way for me to make money and do no work.
So. Yeah, I like this. I like this. See,
can't wait to hear the hyper pop remix.
Just mad distortion on silence.
That's like, yeah.
Oh, actually, no. If you use a M Wave Shaper and just raise the bottom node off of zero, silence gets fucking loud. So this could work.
Yeah, play that on your systems.
How does it make any noise out of no noise?
I don't know. I haven't tried it on zero.
It's the power of a thousand.
Yeah, exactly. You know, if there's anything above zero, it could raise that noise floor to infinity. But if there's nothing, zero times anything, it's still zero.
Damn. Fucking math, man.
Quick maths.
Yeah. So last week we did this like really in-depth episode about like how to use clipping for loudness. We like really dove into it. I thought it was really good. And like the time before we talked about mental health, and the time before we talked about like the power of committing. And this time, since we're late and have no plan, I think we should just bullshit like we used to back in the day. This is a throwback episode.
Dude, I miss the bullshit episodes.
Oh, me too, man.
Like,
me too.
Yo, I actually got a question I'd love to ask carnage, you guys after. Like, that
shit was better hilarious. Be some bullshit.
Oh, man. Yeah. Yeah, I actually got a question I'd love to ask you guys, and we could just let it roll wherever. But okay.
Yes.
I don't want to say production. It's not a yes or no question. It's more in depth, all right? It's no simpleton ass question. I need to know.
Sausage fattener.
Fuck, that was the answer. Question,
but the answer was sausage fattener.
No, I'm just curious, like, what are you guys, what's your, you know how we talked about, like, every kind of 3 to 6 months you learn, like, a new thing? What's, like, what's your guys', like, latest thing?
Two like sausage I'm, patterns. Two,
on you figured out the key is just double patterns. It. Wait till you hear about four.
Okay, oh, so shit. Suboctave, if this is your first time listening to our podcast, I have a. This might not or may be incredibly funny to you, but I do actually use sausage fattener on my master at 1%. That is a fact.
It sounds so, false, but
I swear to God, you can look at my master chain I used on the entire Escapism album. Sausage fattener is on there at 1%.
1%. That's really what's holding it all together.
It may or may not be, but literally try it yourself.
On the whole album.
If you use sausage fattener to 10% on any sound, it's like really does actually move the needle. At 1%, it's like gentle warming, gentle like compression and limiting, and like it's just like a little bit of secret sauce.
That's the
that little sausage gravy.
There's no escaping sausage fattener on Escapism. So
you have biscuits, though. There's no reason to have gravy.
Disco biscuits?
Gravy especially with no
biscuits. Yeah. Oh, that's shit. That's a throwback.
That's a rave gravy inside joke.
Yes,
if I ever
it
heard
is.
One.
You can be my disco biscuits. I'll be your rave gravy. Oh, man. You got to revive that project. I played our tune out, the Thank You Reality drum and bass tune we made. I played it out at C Compression at Seattle Center on Saturday night.
Oh,
and,
yeah?
Yes. It was my one dubstep tune of my, like, almost hour and a half on stage. And then, like, the next dude did nothing but dubstep for his hour and a half on stage.
Was it your last song?
Nothing but drum and bass. No, it was not. It was kind of in the middle.
I was going to say, that would have been perfect because the end also, like, basically just like fades out and then like does that like glitched out like thank you. It says thank you. That's like actually the perfect song.
Yeah, I have ended sets on that. I have ended sets on that. This one, the DJ after me. So we were on this rigging. We were on this like scaffolding, super not up. There was no like ladder or stairs to get up there. You had to like climb through the bars
Sick.
To get up there.
Well,
it was like all
warm-up.
Metal and like super wiggly, like so wiggly that the monitor speakers that were sitting on the sides of the stage facing in towards the DJ, every time you danced, they would slowly rotate and face the back.
Did you fear for your safety?
No.
Was it that?
But
was it that
we
nice?
Should have feared for the safety of Home Dude's DJ. Because I definitely helped dance it off of the table that it was sitting on at one point.
It hit
point.
The floor?
Not all the way to the floor, a story down, but it hit the metal scaffolding we were on. And then he set it up, and it turned on, and it worked, and he, like, tested his shit. He was like, dope, everything's working, no worries. And then, like, we were about to hand off, and he's like, okay, cool, man, just play a couple more songs, and I'll be ready. I was like, dope. And then he goes, fuck, and I look over, and his entire board, all the lights went out. And he could not figure it out. He blamed it on some other wire that was touching his speaker wires, and he thinks it fried it. I think we might have crushed it when we danced it off the table. I don't know. Either way, that guy didn't end up playing that night. I ended up playing for an extra, like, through half of his set, and then they brought the other guy who's next after him to play the second half of his set.
That is brutal.
Yeah, pretty brutal. Tough break, Comboy.
Because to play an hour set, you probably prepped for at least 5 to 10
minutes. Yeah, me too, man. I took songs and I put them in a playlist and then I played them.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Depending on how experienced you are, like if you played last week and you like, you know, if you got your shit dialed, but.
Yeah. I don't know. He said he was a pretty experienced DJ, so I think, you know, it's probably okay for him. You know, if you've never done a set before and this is your first time being on a set and you prepared for 10 hours practicing and then you don't get to play, that's the coldest bummer in the world.
Yeah,
but like if you played a bunch of sets and you show up and like fuck the night before in Denver or the week before in Denver when I was there for the producer EP boot camp with Ill Gates, me and Danny with the Balance and Alexander were supposed to all play the Sunday night opening party. Which got moved to venues twice and got moved to like a food court basically. And so they're like, yeah, well, you're definitely not DJing the food court. And so they were like, okay, you're not going to play, but maybe you'll play Friday. And I was like, okay. And then we got there and they're like, okay, doesn't look like we have time. You're not going to play Friday. And I was like, okay. And then they're like, oh, it turns out we do have time and you are going to play today. And I was like, okay. It was great. I really enjoyed it. But if I hadn't gotten to play, it wouldn't have like ruined my night. It's one of those things. Yeah. Where, well, the more you do a thing, the less important it is, the less like precious you are about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
like writing,
you gotta get the reps in. That I was literally just gonna say, like, the first song you ever make feels really important, but it's not. I mean, it is important for the fact that you made it at all, because now you have made a song. But don't spend 3 months on your first song thinking it's gonna do something for you. It's not. Don't even post it online. Like, maybe show your mom, because she's gonna think it's really cool you made something.
That's one we all learn the hard way, though.
True. Literally, you could have told me the same shit back then, and I would have been like, no, yeah, dude, this is a game changer.
You kind of need a bit of that to like keep moving forward.
Yeah.
Because if you think you're ass, like, what are you doing? Why are you showing up?
Sub-Octave, we had an episode where we played a bunch of like the first songs we ever made. So if you never want to listen to the first song you ever made, but think it would be funny to listen to ours, there is an episode where we did that and it was funny objectively.
Yeah. It's like maybe funny. In the '80s of the episode somewhere. It's like roasting our early tracks. That one was really fun, playing the shit I made in high school and shit.
Man. Yeah. And while we're referencing stuff in the chat, Sub-Octave, you mentioned you can't believe you haven't snagged Sausage Fattener. Do it. But the reason everything we were saying is funny is because most people overuse it and then it just blows everything out, which is why it's hilarious. I have it on my master. So like, just go easy on it. If you do decide to get it, just yes.
Go yeah.
Easy. Yeah. You don't need it, but it's like, it's there since like the early days. So it's like,
it's a tool in the
tool. It's a cult classic.
It is
a certified classic. Hood classic.
Hey. So much. There is a freaking emoji thing for it in Discord.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, there is that good old sausage.
God, what an amazing UI.
It's a compressor, saturator, and a limiter at, I don't know exactly at what stages all of those things kick in, but it basically does all three of those things, which is why it's really easy to overdo and also why it like just beefs stuff up so quickly.
Yeah, it's also sick because you get to see the like sausage guys go,
his angry face changes. It's actually that it is funny.
It's a also big perk, helps the sound.
Endless Smile by the same people.
Yeah,
great plugin. It's like a Far Away rack, but like just a totally different sounding version, kind of.
Yeah, and they have like different presets and stuff, which is cool.
Yeah,
the Even Closer rack,
or the Even Further.
It's the Even More Further in Different Ways rack.
Yes,
further in different directions.
More, you threw the sausage even farther. Sausage,
like throwing a sausage down a hallway.
Yes.
Oh Jesus. Oh yeah. Man, if we had started on the rails, I'd say we were off them, but we were in the woods to begin with.
Yeah. Man, I miss these episodes.
Yeah, yes. These are fun. Oh, shouts out to the secret guest. He says your homie was playing Sea Compression too. That's what's up. What stage did he play on? What did he play? Who are they? Because maybe I boogied to it after my set.
Maybe he broke his controller.
Oh boy.
Sorry, bro. But it was a good party. Well, my favorite part about the whole party, I gotta say, is how a bunch of people came and told me.
Subset? Sorry, not to interject.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's sick. I used to be homies with him when I lived up in Seattle and was doing some Q things from time to time.
Well, that's what's up. Well, shouts to Subset.
He's the man. Not only is he a like incredible DJ, he's just a really good dude and
helps.
Yeah. And he's like not the classic clubby fucking gatekeeper type. Like, yeah, he is just a G. I really like the dude.
Oh, we'll have
good,
to holler.
Good vibes. Yeah.
All right. So I need to know what's your 9 hours straight.
He did a Twitch stream where he played for 69 hours straight. The guy's a legend.
Jesus.
Yo, I need to know your production sauce though, my boys.
Oh shit. Yeah, we've been avoiding the hell out of that question.
Well, I already told you mine.
So I don't even know how we got Luke, off the rails.
Luke, your turn.
I mean, I feel
what
like
was your sausage entire fragment?
Episode of yeah. about it last time about clipping.
Are you using that Melda bundle a lot?
Not a ton. No, I mean, I use that Wave Shaper a lot. But like I said in that episode, mostly for sound design. Yeah, that's pretty much it.
I fuck with the auto tune. It has a really nice like form and shifter in it.
Oh, nice.
If anybody's like ever curious about doing vocals, that's a great one because changing the form of your voice, I feel like, just makes it so much less cringy at first.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And I use it all the time too. But yeah. Oxford inflator is sick.
I will say one thing that I actually have noticed lately when I'm working on stuff, like it's like so simple, but like in the intermediate stages of production, I always used to just like find samples that were cool and then put them in and be like, yeah, that's like close enough to what I wanted. But now I've realized like the difference between like good and great is like literally just doing some simple shit. Like if your kick is like just a little bit too long, taking 5 minutes to figure out like the perfect length of your kick with like the fade in the fucking simpler in Ableton, or like you have, you know, a bass sound or whatever, and it like has just a little bit too much tail and you like, all right, that's just like not quite right. You bounce it and then just use audio fades. Like I swear to God, like I have done more like audio fading to get like just the presentation of a sound like perfect more nowadays than I ever have. And I swear to God, that shit matters like a lot. Because it just makes everything sound so like tight and intentional. And when it sounds intentional, you can do pretty much whatever the fuck you want, because like it doesn't sound haphazard. It doesn't sound like you were like it makes it sound really pro, right? If everything is like exactly how it should be. And sometimes it takes 20 different tiny little like, oh, okay, I move the dot from the middle down 25%. No, that's too much. Move it back up and move it over. No, that's also not what I want. So you move it 10% down and 2% over, and you're like squinting at the screen and you're like, did that move? And then you're like, you play it and you're like, oh, that's perfect. And I don't know if that's just because I've done it long enough that my ear is like, no, it's not quite right. And I just like fiddle with it until it is. Or if just through like getting better at this stuff, I've noticed that like that is the right way to do it. I have no idea, but I have noticed that it matters.
Yeah, definitely. And I always think of the example of like woodworking or some shit like that. Like those people that carve like, yeah, for the most part, if you just have like a log, you're going to have to make some pretty big moves. But like, you know, I feel like if you're making like a cabinet or something, if you're just going like very roughly over everything and then coming back to like do all the details you can, versus like just starting from like one part, like every single part you build, just like making it how you want it, like dialing in all the details, like carving in like the little stuff. I don't know if it's just my mind. I don't know why the fuck it draws that comparison, but I always just think of like the people who carve like the really in-depth shit, like a horse, and then like the mane, you could see like all the like hairs and shit. It's like the amount of detail that goes into that is like kind of comparable to, you know, doing what you need. Anyway, this is like a very loose analogy, clearly, no, but like
I totally like that though. It does totally apply to making.
Yeah, because then you have that thing that's dialed in, your kick and bass or whatever, yeah. And now anything you put on top of it is immediately doper.
Literally, like yeah. that's actually a really good point as well, and like. This is the kind of shit that I wish someone would have told me when I started making music, where like at first you think all the wrong stuff is important, and like you spend all your time doing the shit that doesn't matter nearly as much as the shit that does. And the shit that does is the simplest, most obvious shit that you would just overlook, like getting your drums tight and the groove perfect before you start copying it out. Then you have this mess, like, or like nowadays, I swear to God, I spend like half my time in writing a song, getting the bare bones basic shit for the song perfect. And then it's like, as I'm working on the idea, like I can, and I guess this is also like you do it long enough, you get the intuition, but like I can hear what the rest of the stuff could do or should do, or like, you know, might work doing. But like when you get just the basic shit, your baseline, your kick, snare pattern, like the samples are right, like the hit and the feel good. If all of that shit is working, then it's like, okay, cool. Like the rest of the track is going to write itself. Like, and that also includes like your chords and like songwriting elements of like what the notes are doing and the timing of them. But if all of that is right, then like if you get the bass line like timed perfectly, like in the pocket, and the drums are like even just the kick and snare. In my case, I always have like a kick, an accent kick slash ghost kick and snare, and then like some sort of bass sound. And like, if that is sounding dialed, like your bass MIDI, say, like for instance, you can copy that timing into like literally everything else, like your chords, your lead, and then you just like change the notes, like up and down, like find the right melody that you want. But like the groove and everything, like if that's figured out first, everything else is going to sound tight and like correct. Mm-hmm. You like built yourself a template.
Yeah, it's like building a house on a solid foundation.
Exactly.
Versus like in a swamp where shit's exactly mushy and not
because
solid.
Once 3/4 of the house is built and you realize the foundation is crooked, it takes you a fucking year to go back and fix that foundation before you can build the rest of the 25% of the house. And that is the soul killer that makes you not finish a song. Now, the catch 22 is if you spend too long diddling with stuff at the start, like you may lose steam on it. And so, yeah, it's tough. Like, I don't know how much of this is like just doing it for long enough that I like know what all of the other stuff like could do for my style. And it's like not hard to figure out the accoutrements, the side dishes that go with a song. Like, I don't know, but that has definitely been something I've noticed.
Mm. I mean, accoutrements.
Accoutrements.
Fancy Frenchman.
Fancy, fancy.
Part Canadian or something. Yeah, French though. Canadian, yes. Speaking from of that, Quebec. Like about like what to focus on at the beginning of a song and like what's really important is like one thing that Dylan was really hammering in over EP Boot Camp, and he like one day he just like started 5 like no middling around style, you know, one drop beats and went and played them out at his show that night. And the songs where he started with like a really good spark that ended up being like the face of the drop, something that was like, oh, that's the sound. That mud pie is cool as hell. Let's like find a couple of cool chunks of that and then throw some drums on it and then find a pre-drop vocal. Like those songs turned out well right away. Whereas the ones where he was like, yo, let me spend all this time on this drum groove and then try to find something worthy on top of it. And it was just like, no, that doesn't fit. That doesn't fit. No, that doesn't work. That doesn't fit. Fuck. What are we doing here? This song kind of fell apart already and we barely started. So like,
yeah.
To your question, like when is it important, like to get into that drum groove and when is it, you know, when is that too in the weeds? I think it's like, if you have a dope song idea is the cutoff. Like if you have a really dope song idea, whether that's like a hook or a lyric or a melody or a piece of sound design, something where you're like, holy shit, this can carry a tune. This can carry my song and make people remember it. Then make sure that the drum groove you put on it is really fucking dialed. You know?
That is exactly. Like it won't be an effort and a slog for you to do the arduous process if it requires it, if the shit that's already there is so undeniable that you're like, well, there's no other choice. I have to finish this. Like you're good. Like it like works itself out. However much time it takes. Like if the first thing that matters is important enough, the rest of the shit will figure itself out.
Yeah. Amen. So kind of Ill Gates really talks about like that top down hierarchy of songwriting, like focus on the parts that are the actual song. And that's like, when you think about what is an actual song, when you copyright it, it's like the lyrics and the melody, you know? Mm-hmm. And then, you know, when you get into the sound design music, it's like the sound design and the melody is kind of, you know, what you're really going on. So if you start with that cool ass sound design, if you're making sound design music, start with the mud pie. If you're making lyrical music, start with the lyrics and melody and then accompany it. And, you know, the accompaniment's got to come after. If you write the accompaniment first, and, you know, this is not a hard and fast rule. This is not an eternal rule. Like, sometimes you come up with a cool drum groove and then an idea presents itself. It can't work, but I think your hit percentage is going to be higher if you focus on the more important parts of the song first.
On the topic of shit that matters, that is hard to learn and, like, hard to actually do in practice, is, like, something that you just reminded me of when you said that. Like, say you start with, like, you know, a really good idea and then something else presents itself that is like, oh shit, this is sick. And then that first thing that you spent a bunch of time on doesn't really work with that new thing that objectively, like, you know it in your gut is better, like worthy of all the time to finish a song. Trust your gut when you think something isn't really working, and like, don't try and shoehorn it in just because you think it's cool or you want it in there because you spent a bunch of time on it, or it like, but it sounds so cool, like I think I could get it to work. Like, if you're having those conversations in your head, cut it. Like you got to trust your gut on what to leave out. And like, that shit is hard, really hard, because we've all done it. Like, we're all working on that one thing and you're like, I know it can work. And you just dig deeper and deeper and deeper. And then one of two things happen. You either dig deep enough that you're like, yeah, I got it. But then you didn't actually, and you wake up the next day and you're like, fuck, that still doesn't work. Or you like just keep going with the song, like with that thing in, and then you create a bunch of problems for yourself and never finish the tune. Like, you really, it's easier said than done, but you gotta trust your gut when shit's not working. What I've found is that, like, literally, if you're having the thought, I don't know if this is working, like, I think I can keep working on it to make it work, but I don't know, It's not.
Yeah, I've just learned that the hard way.
Yeah.
Yeah, so many times. Why wasn't this
working? Oh, because the lead patch is trash. Just trash. Yeah. I tried 9 layers of the same bullshit on top of it with different effects, and it just got, and now it's a trash pile. Yeah. Time to set the trash pile on fire and start over. Yeah. I should have just gone to that MIDI and started fucking preset shredding through different patches. Like, if you need 9 layers of the same thing to try and make the thing good, I learned that day, it's not good.
Exactly. My other favorite is, like, you're working on this thing and you're like, oh, fuck, it's just in the way. Like, let me turn it down a little bit. And then you're working and you're like, God, it kind of still is like clashing a little. Let me just like turn it down a little bit and then like high pass it a bit more. And then like, you keep having that thought until you've high passed it to like 1 or 2K and you've turned it down to like 25 dB and you like can't really hear it, but you're like, oh yeah, that's like the sauce it needed. And then like, if you were honest with yourself and you turned it off and you can, it makes everything else more intelligible, get rid of it. The other thing I've begun doing a lot recently in like the past couple of years is when I'm at the end of a song, like 95% done in the mixing stage, and I'm like working on a layer and it's just really tough to get it to fit in, like doing a really tough objective, like if I turn this off, do I really miss it? Because you're probably going to miss it if you spent a lot of time on it, just because your brain is like, no, it's got to be in there. Like, does the song really miss it? Does it feel empty? Does it feel hollow?
Also, like, space is good.
Space
can be good.
You
could
need
something
space.
Else, because they're like a field recording that just like gives it a could vinyl
just
crackle. Like,
add reverb parallel side-chained to your snare and fill out the background. Like, do you really need that thing? And I found that, like, at the 95% stage, normally I find like one or two things that along the way I put in there that was just an idea that as I was working on the song, I'm like, oh, this would sound cool. And I like put it in there. And then it's like, you know, in the background or whatever. And at some point I'm like, that actually just doesn't need to be there. But again, that's like, it's tough to be at that point in a song and just start chopping stuff. Cause you're like, oh, I'm almost there. Like, I can't, I've spent so much time on all this. Like, can I really get rid of that? Like, eventually your gut will, your intuition will get to the point where you're like, yeah, that actually should go. And then as soon as, when you start getting comfortable doing that a lot, then it just makes everything sound way bigger, way better.
And like you mentioned, like when you turn it off right in the middle of like working on it and you're like, oh, it's gone, I'm worried about it, try muting it, walking out of the room, grab a snack, walk around the block, come back, press play with it muted, and just see if like the song's still your song.
Yeah.
It probably
or works. You're like me and you're a blunt hammer and just work on it like dead straight. Like, turn it off and work on a different section that didn't have it. Like, work on something else and then
fresh
play it back and you're like, damn, this hits way better. What happened? Oh, shit. It's because that thing is off that I thought was so good, needed to be in there. Yeah.
Yeah. I love that this got brought up because Bunny asked what was like a big breakthrough or like block that we've overcome. And I 1000% feel like my biggest hurdle I've overcome or whatever thing that's helped me musically is deleting shit, basically recognizing when it's trash and burning the trash pile on fire and starting over again. And before, I used to see it as a waste and I would like get caught up in like, oh, I don't want to record my lyrics till I know what I'm saying, because then if I do harmonies, it's such a pain in the ass to re-record and blah, blah, blah. And that like is kind of like a scarcity mindset in a sense, because you're like, it's just really not that hard to go over and do it. And wasting a day on trying to figure out how to approach this section is just exercising your problem solving skills. Obviously, you don't want to give up on these ideas too early, but spend a day trying to figure out how to do this verse or this drop and come back to it after. And if it's trash, figure out what do I like about my attempt here and what don't I like about it, and then use that to guide your next attempt. And if you follow the 80-20 rule, you know, 1 out of 5 times you'll probably get it. Maybe it'll be time 2, maybe it'll be time 5, but just try doing that shit a couple of times. Like, so many tracks I've restarted in the last couple of months where I wasn't feeling a verse or a hook or something, it felt really weird to hear that section with a new part. And like, people, if I've showed them the demo, they're like, oh, I don't know, like, maybe you should keep it how it was. And I understand that perspective too. I think it's good to have that initial version to hear what you liked about it better. But maybe you have to write a section 3 times, listen back to all 3 and figure out like the bits you liked from each, so that you can go and do it a 4th time finally how you need to have it done, you know? So that's a big part. Like, don't be afraid of redoing a part over again. Just don't do it blindly. Like, take your efforts and like really try to articulate and put into like words what you like and don't like about it. The more that you can communicate, it's not about sharing those thoughts with like me or a sensei or whatever. It's so that you can mentally like put it in your mental filing cabinet of like music production tricks and shit to like help you out. It'll help it stick for you. But yeah, that's really the biggest thing. And then another thing too that you said, Evan, is like, does this thing need to be here? And I really hope I can express fully what I mean by this. But a huge breakthrough I had as well was realizing I don't have to do all the production tricks in every single song I do. Like, certain songs can feature different shit. Like, one, for example, you learn that, hey, I have some loud shit. Maybe I should have some quiet shit. So what I used to do and what a lot of people do is they're like, okay, well, one trick is I could put a bit of reverb on my snare. And then another trick is I could add a field recording. And then another trick is I could do this. And they end up using like five tricks. And then there's no negative space left after. But it's like, if you know, maybe mud pieing, sound design, blah, 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 three different tricks to creating lead elements and three different tricks for background shit, you can combine those in different combinations across your track. And maybe for one song, you do the mud pie and the snare with the reverb. And then the next track, you do silence and you sound design every element, or it's Foley or some shit like that. And that's what gives the character to your tracks. It's not about doing everything at all times. It's about having a bag of like, okay, here's a couple different ways I could make leads. Here's a couple different ways I could like fill out my background. Here's a couple different ways of this. It's like, here's five shades of blue, five shades of green, five shades of red. And one day you're going to be feeling the darker shades. One day you're going to feel the lighter shades. One day you're going to want light reds and dark blues. And that's the kind of way you should be thinking about this. Don't ever paint in absolutes when you're drawing your musical image. Like, really be like conscious of what colors you're choosing to use and not use, especially.
Yeah. No, I love that analogy. That also goes back to our long-standing analogy on this podcast of like a great film has like a consistent coloration, like emphasis on the dark blues and like, you know, there's literally the person that colors the film, their job is to take like a set of like 10 colors and like emphasize and like make the mood of the film feel consistent through all of the different shots and variety of locations and lighting and everything. And that is also 100% necessary in music. Like, you can't paint with every color in watercolors and acrylic and colored pencils and then crayons at the end. Like, use a consistent feel of the textures of things. And that's why, like, for instance, if you do like a mud pie that's like real long and there's like a bunch of different sounds that are, you know, that you could use in a drop or whatever from that mud pie, like, use all of those. And then when you're trying to make a statement, then like maybe break the mold of that like a little bit. But like, if you just grab all of the coolest bass sounds, one shots, you know, the Cymatics one and like this other one that I got off Splice and just like all the coolest ones, they're not going to feel texturally like they came from the same place. It's gonna feel like the film is not colored in the same way. And I feel like that, because I feel like you and I, Tesco, are like very visual people, and like how we represent like things that like we feel and like are, you know, being intuitive with, like, that has always made a lot of sense to me. Mm-hmm. So yeah, couldn't agree more.
Amen.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, that selectiveness, and Dylan talks about this a lot too. It's what really gives each song its identity. And yeah. I know it's something I struggle with a lot, and a lot of students tell me they struggle with, and I so empathize with it, because I remember putting out my EP. It was so hard to like give songs a theme, and the ways that I was trying to go about giving songs a theme and a purpose just didn't. It was very weak. It was like a C+ effort. It was like trying to fulfill an assignment and trying to go about it logically and taking out a lot of like the feel and intention behind the music, because I was so focused on the production techniques behind it. But the thing is, you can have a song that is simple and imperfect, and that one imperfection could be the whole point of the song, and where people will try to like hide the imperfections and like really massage things into place and make things like, I think it's to guard it from judgment almost.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, to a degree, obviously, right? Because if you're in a learning stage, maybe you're just not, you know, you haven't figured it out, but there is definitely, if you're in a writing mindset and these things come out and you're kind of approaching it insecurely or from a way where you're hard on these ideas because they didn't come out perfectly like how a computer should generate it, it's not like, then you're missing that like magic of music making, and especially in electronic music where you're not recording as much stuff. If you're recording, especially embrace mistakes, but if you're making electronic based music, you really have to take every opportunity you can to like find these little like abnormalities and highlight them, because that's everything for the song. And instead of you having like 10 super saw layers, if you figure out like what's the one either element that's unique, or what's like a melody or some thing that is imperfect in some way that has something different to it. Maybe it's messed up in the rhythm or the pitch, or it's like slightly out of key or something quote unquote wrong that you learn, and you can make that like, I don't want to say make it the forefront, but just don't hide it in the background. Lean don't try it. To eradicate it and like be ashamed of it. But the more you can embrace that kind of stuff, it really brings magic to your music, and it makes you not have to add 50 layers and reverb on this and delay on this and chorus on this and all this kind of shit to like mask how uninteresting the track is, because you've killed the magic of it through like...
No.
You know, being too 100%. Perfect.
Yeah, you literally, you got to embrace the magic, and you don't know when it's going to come, but literally like you got to, don't be insecure about it. Like if you love it in that moment, and then later you're like, oh, I don't know, it's just kind of like not, it's like too distorted, or it's like not clean, or, you know, it doesn't sound like, you know, this producer or whatever, like lean in to the magic. Lean in to the magic.
There it is. The magic. I love it. And you know, magic. Yeah.
And if you don't have any magic in your studio, get you a spinny floaty plant.
Get you some magic.
Better.
Planet Goob Glob.
If you don't have a spinny floaty plant, is it even a music studio? Mine is not a music studio. I have no plants. I have all the other things but that. Yeah, with breakthroughs. One of my big breakthroughs has really been in like the concept of hypeness, like in how much energy I need to apply, or like what my music is supposed to be acceptable to a dance floor. And this year I've really been embracing like letting my songs be as chill as they are. Some are more hype, some are less hype, some are way less hype. And I think like, oh, will this one even move a dance floor? Will anybody even want to dance? And they do, they just dance different. And like, for example, that gig I was talking about, Sea Compression on Saturday night, it like I had like the most eclectic and one of the most chill sets. You know, there were some like heavier moments, but like overall, like a lot of the other people's sets were like all upbeat house music or all drum and bass. And my set was like really eclectic. There was a lot more chill moments and like low key parts and breakdowns where the beat stopped for a while. And, you know, I'm looking out over the crowd like, I don't know, are these people liking it? I'm playing what I like, and it's my set, so fuck them. But they're still standing here, so, you know, it's probably working at least a little. Yeah. But then there's, like, a fair amount of people, like, probably 8 or 10 strangers, aside from all the friends I saw that gave me props on my set. But, like, 8 or 10 strangers, like, specifically stopped me in the crowd, like, wasn't that you DJing over there a while ago? I loved your set. That was my favorite set of the night so far.
No shit.
Like, and I was like, fuck, damn, yeah. Like, that feels really good to hear. Like me doing what I do. Yeah. Yeah. Right. And like remembering that, like, you don't have to keep people headbanging for an hour straight. You don't have to keep them jumping for an hour straight. Like give them an interesting ride. And it also really reminded me, like, I've been asking myself, like, how do I make my music project work when I have so many genres that I do? And it's really validating to, like, remember that, like, man, I went all the way around the tempos, like, 1.5 times, like, one time through. And then I realized, so I was like, oh, shit, I got to play extra. So I just, like, went back and picked up all the songs I didn't play and then hit another playlist and started jumping around there. But, like,
you went to 128, you went back to 65.
Yep, exactly.
Slowed it down.
Nice.
Yeah, went all the way back.
All the way around. And, like, I don't know. There's probably some people who are like, oh, this is a weird set. I'm walking away because, like, it doesn't just play house music or it's not just drum and bass. But, like, for all the people like me that love both those genres and don't want to listen to a straight hour of it most of the time, that's who I'm making music for. People who like eclectic shit. And I can just market it without specific genres in my marketing.
100%. Like, for one, the biggest thing that I've noticed, like, draws me in, like, pulls me into someone's set is if it really looks like it's them. It's like, it's authentic, you know. It's not like they're playing songs that they think people want to hear. They're up there like, this is the shit that I know in my heart is my favorite and I think is cool. And because that is true, it probably also is cool. And that if you are being authentic with your taste and, like, just like, no one else is going to do exactly what you and your unique cross section of taste is going to, like, determine. And so, like, that's what makes it special. It's like, no one else would do it like that. And it makes it worth watching. Right. And it's hard to lean into that because there's no proven track record for uniqueness in any given way. Right.
Yeah.
And so you can't.
If anything, there's like a negative correlation.
Exactly. And but, so it's really hard to have confidence in that, like, full uniqueness aspect. And the funny part is, like, that is the shit that actually moves the needle. That is the shit that actually makes people care, that actually creates super fans, creates magic.
Woo!
And
it's
like,
it's almost stopped spinning. It's only a little bit of magic left.
You know what? It'll potentially stop spinning and then go back the other way. Even that's double magic. If that ever happened, it just did it. That's double magic right there. But yeah. And then the other thing, I forgot the other thing I was going to say because so much magic happened.
I mean, like, you're basically going on, like, about how, you know, like, when you, like, really pick your different thing that you're doing, that's where you create super fans, because there's people that are, like, out there being like, damn, if only there was XYZ for me to go to a set of instead of this thing that I've heard 1,000 times. And then they hear you do that, then they're like, holy shit, I'm your fan for life, because you're the first person to ever do what I wanted.
Yeah. And so, like, that translated into your music production also creates your sound, it creates your style, it creates your identity. And it's the same thing for the music that you play and the music that you make. Like, it's a slower burn. It doesn't have a predefined audience, but it makes people care if it's unique and authentic. And whatever it is, there's probably 5% of the population out there that would fuck with it, at least, you know, to stand there and watch a whole set of it. And there's probably 1% of the population that is like, shit, I didn't know this existed, but now I could not live without it. Because most of the shit people hear nowadays is, like, contextualized in 1,000 other tracks they've heard before. Mm-hmm. And that works, but it doesn't grab you.
Yeah. And you have to be better than those 1,000 tracks if you want to grab somebody with that.
100%.
Like, or, like, at least, like, significantly different, like, whether it's like a lyric that they never thought they would hear, or like a melody that's so different that, you know, like, you got to do something that really stands out. But, like, if you just, like, blend some shit people haven't blended before, the way that your brain wants to, anyways,
it could be simple. It doesn't have to be that far from what is already being done. But if you can't try and do something that's, like, you know, a little bit away from the beaten path that you don't love yourself, because that shit shows. Like, if you truly love it, other people will love it too for the simple fact that like you put the time and care and attention and dedication and passion shows through when you truly love it yourself. And that is like, especially when there's so much other music out there today that is like, people could listen to a million different versions of the thing that like, you know, it, this or that track sounds like you have to give people a reason to give a shit. And the fucked up part is the music ecosystem of eternity, including today, is not set up for the authenticity to succeed. The authenticity succeeds against all odds, and that is what you hear about. People doing experimental shit and then they become a legend like fucking Jimi Hendrix or like a million other examples. That
Breach.
Every single one of those stories is true and starts with a, I got a million no's because it wasn't marketable. Like that is the fucking tough part, is like, if you're actually trying to do what you give a shit about that is unique to you, it's probably going to be 10 times as hard. Like,
at the beginning, and then you hit a tipping point where it gets easier than anybody
else. But exactly, but that is why you have to like
find you and be like, oh yeah, we know what to do with this. We can put you on this bill, but then you're just one of 10 house producers that went on the night that just does basic.
There's no staying power. There's no staying power. So even though it's a slower burn, even though it is more difficult, you get more no's and you feel like you're not making progress for longer. Most people get to the point where they're about to actually make a difference or actually break through the noise and switch gears into something people know, because it takes so long to actually get people to care about something that is unique to you. But you just gotta stick with it.
Amen.
Sorry, Luke, I kind of cut you off. I don't even know, man.
You were saying gems, so it doesn't matter. It's beautiful.
Man, I want to add one last thing here. That's been a huge help to all the students I've taught, and me too, obviously. That's why I've been sharing it. But on kind of that point we're talking about of like letting a song be a song and like you finding your sound and like dialing that in. One thing for anybody that's like struggling to figure out what they're trying to do is start figuring out who you're trying to exclude and what you're trying to not do. And I feel like that will really help at least break it down from all possibilities to a subset of possibilities. And then you can slowly chip away at that as you gain more experience to figure out what your niche is. But like, if you're always trying to please everybody and you're hopping around genres and you're doing this, or I mean, you could hop around genres, but if you're switching up your style too much and you're writing for different groups of people all the time, then it's just not really going to resonate like that, because there's no like centralized kind of message or like theme that you're trying to get across. But if you know, like, my shit is not for the 30 and plus techno crowd, most likely. Like, this, my style is new techno and it takes all the fucking I'm flipping techno to be some shit that old heads would hate. And coming at that new techno or whatever, you could actually create something very compelling just by coming at it as like, I'm trying to disappoint the parents like listening to this shit. As long as you're a disruptor in that sense, then you can make something happen. But
that is a funny concept. Like, disappointing your parents is like a good thing to aim for.
Yeah, or the last generation. Like, I see it with rap all the time too. Like, all the old heads hate the new shit, and it's like, obviously, because it's taken a whole different life form. And if you look at what's popular at any given time, like whether it's like I'm going to use rap because it's like the most popular, but if you look at like the Juice WRLD, Lil Peep kind of guitar emo rap era, or if you look at like the current, like more electronic kind of based, hyper pop based kind of beats, all that shit's been around. It's been bubbling up like the last like 10 or 15 years. It's just all the people that were ass deep house producers in an oversaturated market finally built up their skills in that, and then when a new wave came that they liked, they hopped on that at the right time and got their shit popping. Or they happened to be in a trend early and just wrote it because they genuinely liked it. But the thing is, anytime that happens, they're not playing it safe and catering to everybody. They're usually disappointing people. There's usually some comments on the SoundCloud being like, this is straight ass, followed by one that's like, I love this, my favorite song. Like,
yeah, that's how you know you have it.
You need to like be inclusive, obviously, to like the people that are willing to be open-minded to your music. But roughly speaking, there's certain demographics where you should be able to point out like, oh, I think they will be disappointed by what I'm doing. And I think these people will outright hate it and despise it. That's how you know you're onto something, when you're pushing a boundary that has not traditionally been pushed. And there is a definable kind of box you're working within. If you're the every genre producer writing for boys, girls, and everybody of all ages and everything, then one song is going to be a kid's song. And then, okay, the four-year-old likes it, but then the next one is like a tear out dubstep song. So then the four-year-old starts crying, but somebody else likes it. And then the next track is something totally different. It's just not going to resonate. But if you're like, I'm not writing music for four-year-olds or 40-year-olds, I'm writing music for, I don't know,
dude. Yeah.
Women, literally, or college students ages 18 to 24. Now you can start like sampling school bells and shit. You can make it feel like fucking summer break, or whatever. Yeah. That's how you really start dialing in. Like, it's not the people that work banks and the people that go to grade school are not going to get that shit. The people literally that go to college will really get that shit.
Yeah. You literally have to embrace sailing your computer off the end of a flat earth, because that is how you become a legend, because the earth's not actually flat. And everyone else thought
you heard it here first.
Ooh-wee, hot take. Hot take. Watch out on YouTube comments.
Yeah.
We're full of analogies here at the Human Music Podcast.
Man. Amen.
Some funny, some okay, some legendary.
Legendary. And, all legendary. We're legends.
Yes.
Hot take.
And with that, Luke.
Well, I just wanted to acknowledge how many questions we had about vocals, and also acknowledge that the people in our chat actually gave some really good advice on vocals. I'm not going to read it out because I don't want to. But also,
come live, you fucking squares.
We also have like three or four.
I was just about to say
other episodes.
I just looked it up. Yeah. Episodes 108 and 109 are about recording and then producing said vocals. So you just scroll on back down there and listen to those episodes down there. We're in the meantime going to give you a peace and a peace among worlds.
Woo.
Yep.
Yeah,
that's right.
Good show, humans.
What it is.
Bye. Alrighty.
I like it.
All right. Now, humans. Yeah. Thank you so much for bumping this. Oh, really appreciate y'all listening. And y'all remember to share this, dude. Make sure if you're listening that you're following on your favorite thing. Share it with your friends. Put a social post out. We need more people to listen to this shit. We make it for y'all, and we love y'all. And however many of y'all are listening is the right amount, but let's make that amount go up. You know what I'm saying? We put hard work into this podcast, and we would love it if y'all would share it for us. And speaking of sharing, might as well share that song of the week that I just either just dropped or I'm about to drop, depending on what day you're listening to this. It drops on December 1st. It's called Kalima. That's me, Luke Rain, featuring Vibra Bohemia. And you can get the link to that below and the link to my whole playlist of all my releases. I would really appreciate it if you would run those up. I've been working hard on those, and we can get them numbers up. Let the people know. Share that for your boy. And support our sponsors while you're down there, like my sample pack that I did with Porch, Spice It Up Percussion and Foley Pack. Over 2,000 percussion loops and one shots and 50 rack instruments. That's like years and years of being on Splice worth of samples. You can download them all at once for just like a couple few months worth of Splice. And Dojo TV, come get in the chat.
watch live, listen, you know what I'm saying? Ask these kind of questions that we talked about in this episode. Tesco's Patreon. Get his Discord, track feedback, private lessons, and more from Tesco. You can learn from our mentor, Ill Gates, in his private weekly group lessons called The Weekly Download. Get access to over 300 more episodes in the archive for just $20 a month. And guest practices, where you can learn from Seth Drake at the Approach Institute. He's the best engineer we know, and your first class is free. And highly recommend buying the entire course. I took it, and whoa, it helped level up my production, my engineering, my mastering, just the way I listen to things. No notes. It's amazing. And yeah, thehumanmusicpodcast.com for anything else you might need. If you want to show people our podcast, just send them thehumanmusicpodcast.com. So easy. Or tell them search The Human Music Podcast on any podcasting platform or YouTube. All right. Love you guys. Bye, humans. Peace. And peace among worlds. I love you guys.